Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The Football Ramble have teamed up with audible.co.uk to offer you, our listeners, a free audiobook of your choosing. All you have to do is register for a 1-month free trial to claim your free audiobook. There are over 60,000 to choose from. If you're in the UK, you can register at audible.co.uk/footballramble. The 30-day free trial means you can choose a free audiobook from sizzling biographies to the latest fiction or even classical works, which is yours to keep whether or not you decide to cancel in the trial period. Register now at audible.co.uk/footballramble.
Fingers on buzzers, ladies and gentlemen. It's the Football Ramble. Lovely to have you here. My name's Marcus, and I've got three chums with me. Jim.
Hello.
Pete.
Hot flavour.
And Luke.
All right.
All right. Now then, we've got an opening question from Duncan Berrington.
Bezos!
Big Bezza. he said, this is inspired by his beloved Baggies victory at Anfield. He's asking what the greatest smash and grabs are. What your favourite smash and grab result is. Obviously, West Brom beat Liverpool 1-0. Liverpool had loads of chances. Jim, what are you going to go for?
I'm going to go for possibly what I think is probably the ultimate smash and grab, because it's such a calculated smash and grab. And almost a sort of... It was like a sort of criminal mastermind was behind it. It was Red Star Belgrade.
Oh, yeah.
The 1991 European Cup final.
I honestly thought you were going to say escape to victory then.
against Marseille, wasn't it? They played for penalties
the whole
game throughout extra time, and they scored all five of their penalties. Robert Prosinecki and Mihailovic scored penalties in that game as well. Outrageous.
There is a great big story behind that, which we don't have time to go into. But yeah, they did play for penalties, though, and it was completely European Cup.
I think that the Marseille players thought it was a bit much when they turned out instead of in their usual kit, but in stripy jumpers and masks with a bag of swag over their shoulder. Right, chaps, you ready?
Pete, what have you got for us?
I'm going to go for one quite recent one, to be honest, one that I saw. Wolves versus Arsenal at the Emirates, where basically Arsenal were on the front foot pretty much 99% of the time.
Yes.
Wayne Hennessy in fine form, and they came away with pretty much nothing. They scored their goal, and Mick McCarthy was jumping around really excitedly. And,
yeah,
I enjoyed that match personally, because just the annoyance but also reserve of the Arsenal fans around me. Yeah. Just kind of not wanting to punch anyone, but they were particularly annoyed about the whole thing.
I quite like,
blast!
I quite miss Mick McCarthy being all happy and animated. Not that he was massively
just
when he was
him.
In the job.
Yeah. Come back, Mick.
A couple of people would have gone back to their house after, and Mummy's relaxation day would have been completely ruined.
Don't get Arsenal in front of me.
I will if I want.
Okay. Be it on your checkbook. Luke, who are you going for?
It's a sad week for Portsmouth.
It is.
Yeah, relegated to League One, which I'm sure you'll come on to later.
Yes.
So I thought I'd give them a few mad props, as the kids are saying.
Wow.
FA Cup quarter final, 2008.
Yeah, absolutely.
Manchester United 0, Portsmouth 1.
Yeah.
That was absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, it really was.
That was the final. Really,
remember, do you know what? 7 minutes in, Ronaldo rinsed the left back. I forget who it was now. And Distan came across the cover, butchered him in the penalty area. No pen.
Yeah.
Do you know what? I thought, it's on. It's on. I was rubbing my hands together.
He got
poleaxed by Distan.
Yeah, I remember.
Yeah, and he just sat on his ass, looking at the Old Trafford crowd with his hands, just looking at him, going,
yeah.
It's done happening at home.
Yeah. Don't be surprised when I leave.
And then there was that ridiculous clearance of a line from Glenn Johnson. Then Michael Carrick was in on goal, three yards out with no keeper, didn't score.
Glenn Johnson's the one where he kind of backheeled it, but he didn't know much about it.
No, he legged it behind him and sort of hooked it off the line.
Okay. Yeah.
Oh, that was a header. It was a header. Sorry,
there
header.
Was, there was one. Was it one of the United players who cleared it off the line? But it was one of those ones where you think, how's that? That was not meant to happen.
There were several of them.
Yes.
And then at half time, Van der Sar went off injured.
Yes.
And Tommy Kuchak came on.
That's only half the story.
His contribution was to bring Milan Baroš down the area.
Mm. Right at the end.
Off he goes. No, it was about 76 minutes.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, and off he goes. And Big Rio's gone in goal for the penalty.
I thought it was a bit further.
No, 76 minutes.
Oh, okay, right.
Because it was a good 10 minutes of me absolutely bricking it.
Because that'd be even worse.
Yeah,
if you lost the league.
Big time. Yeah, and then obviously Montari smashed a pen in. And Ferdinand, to be fair to Ferdinand, he dived the right way. But as I've said to you before, when you see an outfield goalkeeper go and goal, it's only then you truly realise how good goalkeepers are.
Yeah,
outfield player. Yeah.
Absolutely.
So that was, and then obviously Portsmouth went on to lift the cup. So an important one. And something I thought I'd mention for both the Pompey fans that listen in the interest of balance on the week
for when you there. Listen back to it.
Yeah, that's what I meant. Yeah, twice.
Is it all worth it?
No. Obviously not.
The day you guys got relegated, I was down
in Portsmouth.
I was down in Portsmouth for the very first time. Very sad bunch, aren't they?
Yeah, well, we'll talk about that in a bit. I'm going to go for World Cup 2010 when Switzerland beat Spain.
Oh, yeah.
1-0.
It was almost two. Dirty, I could almost score.
It was nearly two, yeah. And then Spain got their act together and became champions of the universe. Mm. Honourable mentions to Scotland away to France in a World Cup qualifier when James McFadden scored a 30-yarder.
Yes.
Into the top corner. Oh, yeah. It was all France. I think that was their only shot on goal.
Greece in every game in the Euros.
Every game.
Smashed and grabbed a tournament. Man United, of course, in the Champions League.
Against Bayern?
Yeah.
Oh, I had to smash and grab.
Well, it was like, 30 seconds to go and they scored twice?
Yeah, have a lot of pressure, though.
Ask Sammy Kafur if he thought it was a smash and grab. Yeah. Ask Lothar Matthäus if he thought it was a smash and grab, Mark.
Ask Clive Tilsley.
Yeah, exactly.
He can't remember that. He was just delirious at the time.
Ah, God bless Clive. Right.
When that actually happened, Clive Tilsley was rolling around the commentary box floor just going, no!
As you would be.
Yeah, fair enough.
I was rolling around my lounge.
We had the Champions League final, Liverpool.
Yeah. Oh yeah, another one. Yeah. That was sort of a four smashes and grabs.
Yeah, exactly. That's the thing.
A couple of dives, couple of penners.
No, a smash and grab. I'm talking about when you are completely under the cosh and then you nick it. Whereas Liverpool,
they were 3-0 down at half time.
No, they were 3-0 down, but it was over a period of time they came back into it.
Yeah. There's three goals in like 8 minutes.
Yeah.
It was a pretty good smash and grab.
Well, I suppose.
Yeah. It was smashy. I think
it's a comeback, isn't it? I think you can only have a couple of goals involved at
most. Don't
call it a
comeback.
And grab it.
Yeah.
we've all done ours anyway. So
yeah, we have. Jim's got the points.
No.
Well, hang on a minute.
You thought you got it, didn't you? You thought you presented the game.
I got
well.
The points and going for gold last week, double.
Yeah. And that was. But now it's this week.
Yeah, true.
And you've yet to perform.
You're only as good as your last result.
Premier League. Let's go straight to Manchester United 4, Everton 4. One of the games of the season.
Hot damn.
Outrageous scenes.
The mental games are back.
Flip.
Just in time.
If Man United don't win the league.
Yeah.
That game, ladies and gentlemen.
Awful defending at times.
3-1 up, cruising. 3-2, 4-2, jobs are good.
Yeah. Mm. At home.
Yeah.
When you got a win for the title race.
But that's so straightforward. I thought before the game, I thought this is a real test. If they win this, they're fine. And they failed.
Mm. Well, I mean, it's interesting. Mancini's by now quite tedious kind of concession of the title. Yeah. Obviously, there's mind games there, and it's clearly to make them, like, you know, complacent. And that's exactly what they were at 4-2. They were just strolling around, celebrating already, practically drinking the champagne.
Yeah. At half time in the Manchester Derby, soon to be. If City are 3-0 up, so is it? Are you back on? Wow, no, it's over. It's over.
Yeah.
It's in City's hands because if they win three games, they win the title.
That's right.
Because three cup finals.
Because of their goal difference, of course.
Yeah.
Well, Ferguson has been saying, we've given the momentum all back to City now. It's become this really strangely polite war of attrition between
them. Ferguson knows what he's doing by saying that.
Well, of course he does. Yeah, but it's boring. We can all see what they're both doing. It's annoying.
But it was just Fellaini's finish for his
volley. That's a beauty.
That was some great goals.
He doesn't usually do that. This is troubling.
Someone emailed me suggesting a song for Nikita Jelovic, which is Follow the Jelovic Road. Follow the Jelovic Road. I think it worked quite good.
I like that.
Yeah.
I'm in my head. I was just trying to jam his name into Mellow Yellow by Donovan, but it doesn't work.
His header for his first goal was excellent.
It was. Matt Letizia was loving it.
Yeah, he was.
I like Letizia in the commentary box.
Yeah,
he's bringing joy back.
Like a just excited Matt Letizia,
as I said on Twitter, he just reminds everybody that this is to be appreciated, to be enjoyed.
Football. Yeah, but then there's 40 minutes when he doesn't say anything, and then near the end of the match, he'll say something amazing.
I'll have a chance to interject.
I'm a fan, but I see what you've done
there. He won't turn up for any rehearsal.
It took a while
because he doesn't need to. He'll never get any international games though.
It's worth noting about that game as well. Tony Hibbert got 2 assists.
He did, great crosses.
It's really, really consistent player, Tony Hibbert. I find it odd that he's never even seemed to have been considered for England, even a place in a squad. Do people just think he's Scottish?
I felt really sorry.
just assume he is.
He does look Scottish. If he was,
yeah, he does look Scottish. I remember he was about to come on in the FA Cup semi final because we were right near the bench. And as he was about to come on, Liverpool scored their second. And he didn't even say anything, just put his jumper back on.
I'm a flair player.
But interestingly enough, Everton haven't scored 4 goals away from home in the Premier League since David Moyes' first away game as Everton manager, which is about 10 years ago.
Has that ever happened to United at Old Trafford, where they've conceded 4? Well, obviously
Man City.
The Man City game this season, yeah.
At the Swamp.
I felt a bit sorry for Danny Welbeck because he made such brilliant contributions.
What
to that
a goal!
Game. Yeah, superb goal.
Incredible little shimmy, wasn't it?
It was nice to see him score an important goal at an important time, because his goal scoring perhaps has let him down slightly this season.
It was almost like he heard you say that he wasn't as good as any of the City strikers, and he's banged one in the top corner.
There you go. And also his movement with Rooney for the 4th, I think it was, when Rooney slotted home, was great play between. It was Cole and York-esque.
Intricate.
But they didn't win. It was 4-all. They dropped points.
Whenever they scored their 4th, it was like it cut to Rooney. He was just walking back to the halfway line, shaking his head like, we've scored 4 goals.
Yeah.
What do you want from me? What more do you want from
me? This never happens to a Man United side.
No. Raphael was just all over the place, wasn't he? When they're sort of, when it was at 4-2 and they did seem to have become complacent, as you were saying, Rafa in particular just wasn't tracking his man at all. It was just
Big Tim Vickery
Ferguson
was saying that,
God, can you imagine being in that dressing room afterwards?
He would have been beside himself. Tim Vickery was saying that there's question marks over the physicality of those twins, whether they can handle the Premier League in terms of its strength.
It was interesting when Ferguson the post-match interview, he kind of just sort of chuckled, and he was very calm, and I thought to myself, you've put on a lot of face there, because you will be utterly furious. But he came out, that'll be a big Manchester derby, all very calm, as if, don't worry, it's not a problem.
And he just says a little smile, and he's got like a petrol can in his hand. What are you doing? I'm going to burn my squad. Burn them.
Is that a cat of 9 tails behind your back? Definitely not.
Are those horns emerging from your skull?
You can imagine the players being like, they're even more terrified when he's like that. They're not for him to be hammering him.
It's psychotic.
There's not enough boots in the boot room to kick at people.
Mum, I've stolen a bottle of whiskey, I drank it all, now I'm drunk. That's fine. What do you mean that's fine? Please be angry instead.
A story from Luke's childhood.
Childhood?
But they dropped points at home to Everton, and Wolves Wolves got relegated as Manchester City beat them 2-0. Shame for Wolves, but it was coming.
Terry Connor's post-match interview was actually quite difficult to watch.
It was quite emotional.
I think that's kind of part of it. All of his, we've said this a few times before, he's very emotional, and he's not particular. If he sat in a room with me, I wouldn't necessarily be. I'd feel just a little bit sorry for him. He's in a difficult situation. He's bottom of the league. He's coming at a time. He doesn't look like the sort of person to really kick some backside. He doesn't look. He always looks a little bit kind of lost.
Well, the reports are that his coaching sessions are really good, and he's an excellent coach and the players like training with him, but there's probably, with the greatest respect to him, and like I say, in this post-match interview he also was at great pains to say, we've got 3 games left and we've got to make sure we preserve the integrity of this division, because the games we play are important to other teams, which I thought was a nice touch. But there's a reason he's been at Wolves as an assistant manager for such a long time. It's probably because he's not really. But then at the same time, if he's offered that job, he's not going to not take it, is he?
No. Some people make their careers through being a good coach, and that's fine. You can be an excellent coach, but just not. Carlos Queiroz, ladies and gentlemen.
Look at Di Matteo. What's he going to do at the end of the season when they bring in a big man?
It'll be difficult for him to stay, wouldn't it? It will be difficult for him to stay.
That's right. Exactly.
We'd have him at Portsmouth. We'd have him.
Well, the thing is, it gives him his sort of career a little bit of a boost, because he's not necessarily, he's not at your clubs that are struggling, like your West Broms and stuff. He's got something that's.
I wouldn't
like,
say West Brom are struggling.
They were at the time.
They were when
Oh, okay, right, sorry.
And he did quite well there, but but it just shows that he can manage a Triple A team to a certain extent.
Pete, I just wanted to say though that the thing is, last time Portsmouth took an ex-Chelsea manager who was managing at the later stage of the Champions League, it all went swimmingly well, so we'll definitely have Di Matteo.
That could be like,
ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Avram Grant.
That could be the routine, the couldn't it?
Yeah,
because Chelsea get through managers.
Yeah, that's true. We'll take them.
So you'll probably get like one in three off Chelsea.
I think
just
so.
At the sort of going rate for Pompey and
It could happen.
But City just stepped up, didn't they?
They did.
Wolves, they looked like they were really sort of going for it at first. They looked like they were actually going to sort of make a decent fight of it, but they're just not good enough, are they? You look at that squad, you think maybe Hennessy, Matt Jarvis, and probably Stephen Fletcher will get moves elsewhere, but other than that, you know, there's...
It was a shame for Wolves because actually they did look quite lively.
They started very well.
Yeah, but it was just one of those ones where Manchester City just thought, no.
They smelled blood, didn't they?
They had lots of chances, all sorts of chances.
Yeah, and it was just one of those ones where you thought, oh, come on, Wolves. You know, you don't like to see anybody go down, but it was just a big...
Someone's got to.
You do wonder, I mean, change the rules. What would have happened if McCarthy had stayed? They probably would have had a bit more fight about them. And the fans have been on their backs all season as well. Yeah. You can understand them sort of being disappointed with the results stuff, but clearly it's had a negative effect. It's not helped. Okay. Also, one other weird thing, Samir Nasri has got a really strangely long, elongated finger.
What? Like an eye.
It's really weird. Watch the footage again. He sort of runs off celebrating, wagging his finger. It's like E.T.'s finger. It's weird. It's creepy.
Wow.
Weird.
My goodness. Moving on swiftly to one of two London derbies that happened in the Prem on the weekend. QPR 1, Spurs 0. Mm. Tarak getting another goal.
3-1 QPR to win in that match.
Was it?
That wasn't the goal they scored. It wasn't a free kick either. Yeah. It was a dreadful decision.
Yeah, it was a decent hit, though.
Decent hit.
And then he got sent off.
Yeah, he did.
He'll do that, won't he? He will. But that is frustrating, though, for the manager, because he's just started to get a couple of goals, and you think, oh, Gordon Bennett, here we go. We're right in the running. And then they're going to miss him for probably, I think it's a game. But QPR.
Flying.
I mean, they beat Liverpool.
What about Spurs, though? All these reports coming out of Spurs about Redknapp and... Yeah, I don't know how true it is, but...
Oh, about falling out with the players.
Lots of people have said that Adebola refused to play.
He will do that.
Yeah, exactly.
Is that Redknapp's
fault? Possibly isn't newsworthy in itself.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Sun comes up, shock.
But the other reports were that Walker, Cabal... and one or two others weren't too happy with him. And I don't know how true it is. Lots of, in my opinion, in experience for me anyway, have been reputable sources have said this. Mm. And it is true that Adebayor was removed from the squad very late on. Redknapp had a hamstring injury, but he should be fine for next week. So, yeah, it's a difficult one to judge. But
it's weird, the bottle seems to have gone from Spurs, doesn't it?
They're in a real bad position. It's creaking inevitability
that they're going to drop out of the race for fourth.
To whose gain, Pete?
Don't know.
To Newcastle United.
Don't want to talk about Newcastle this week. I'll get in trouble again.
Well, let us talk about them then.
Apologies for the Sunderland fans. Apparently don't have that bad an away support. Shouldn't have said it. Would have edited it out. Didn't have time. Fuck you. I'm on my forum. Here's Peter's Twitter name. Go on, give him some nonsense. Fucking plastic man. Suck it. That'll do it.
I was about to say before you said that bit, a rare show of contrition from people, wasn't there?
I'm only joking.
Yeah.
So off you go, Pityakers.
Elsewhere in the North East, Newcastle did beat Stoke 3-0. They're into the top four. They're looking good for it.
They're not called Newcastle anymore. They're called the Kabaye Show.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Oh, the cheekbones.
Why was Kabaye not in the Premier League team of the year?
I would argue that there's been some matches where he's gone missing just simply because we've had to defend a lot more, and he's kind of a very forward-facing midfielder.
He's had a fantastic season.
I would argue that the people who have saved our season, Tim Krull, for one, and Danny Simpson, there's so many times he's been on the line, he's cleared the ball off the line and
drinking those eyes as well. Drinking those eyes. Misty eyes.
But they've had some big performers. Colaccini was in the Premier League team of the year.
Yeah, deservedly. And it's good that we've signed him up for a long deal. Not that that means anything in Newcastle United. But you know, if we get Champions League football, it may not be that important to sell. So, you know.
Are you expecting big tings from Kabaye in the Euros?
Well, will he play?
I think he will play.
Will he start for France?
He played in the game they drew against Bosnia where they went through. I think he will play. Yeah,
Ben Arthur should be really in a shout. He's been playing out of his skin the last few games. Six matches.
They've got a lot of quality though, France, haven't they? That's the thing. Yeah. Got a lot of quality.
Yeah. Arsenal drew 0-0 with Chelsea.
Yeah, it was a bizarre reaction from Chelsea as well. They seemed really pleased with it.
You think it was a dull game?
It was an awful game. It almost seemed like you know, like the practice for Barcelona again, like play in this specific way, see if we can get something out of it. I know they made a lot of changes, so clearly they've got one eye on that tactically, but they seem delighted with getting a point. It's like, you're meant to be chasing a sort of a spot in the top four. Surely this is a terrible result for you. I thought that was a must win.
Good result really for Newcastle. I was going to say that when Torres found he was on the team sheet, do you reckon he was delighted, or do you reckon he thought, well, that's me not playing on Tuesday then?
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Yeah, but do you think he would breathe a sigh of relief that he's not playing on Tuesday?
Well, he's got a great record against Barcelona.
Drogba was injured though, wasn't he? So there's Torres might play both. It's more necessity than anything else.
Yeah, possibly. Yeah.
He'd want to play against a Spanish team.
No, he's not
getting in the Euro squad at the moment.
Yeah,
he's got a good record against Barcelona. Actually, he scored a lot of goals against them.
The way things are going with this season, with all these teams just sort of seemingly bottling, the sound of squeaking bums is going to be deafening on the final day.
It's going to be a full fart.
Yes. Everyone will bottle it. No one will win the league. 20 teams will go down.
Yeah, no one wins.
It has been a ridiculously good season.
Yeah, it's been awesome.
Roy Hodgson got one over on Liverpool. I say one over, actually. It was quite a nice affair. The Liverpool fans were respectful of him.
Yeah, I heard they were sort of very, very welcoming of him, which is nice to hear.
Because they're looking in their own dugout, that's why. I'm not bloody surprised they've got a newfound respect for him. Christ.
You're in enough trouble as it is.
Oh, yeah. Oi, oi. Yeah. Going out 5 minutes.
Alan, do you want to come in and do a bit?
You got mad.
Alan Davies.
Oh dear. I'd say a good win for West Brom. It was a lucky win, and even Hodgson said that himself. I mean, Liverpool, it was so unlucky.
I know this is a bit of a stupid fact, but so I saw someone tweet that if Liverpool had scored with every time they hit the woodwork, they'd be fourth.
Wow, that's brilliant.
Amazing, isn't it? Yeah, their form since the turn of the year is like second bottom or something. Yeah, and Hodgson's got a better home record at West Brom and Liverpool have this season. Yeah, he's done a good job.
Do you know the turn of the year who'd be right up there? It would be Fulham.
Probably,
Martin Yeol was saying this. He might be lying. He might be trying to secure another deal. I saw Fulham.
You just believe that lovely voice, don't you?
I do, something like that. But I saw Fulham. I saw Fulham against Wigan on the weekend, and it was so nice to see two sides, not massive teams, of course, but so much of the ball was played on the deck.
Yeah.
You know, and obviously the
Shawmutch,
yeah. It's funny at Fulham because obviously it's quite a quiet crowd. It's all very nice and polite, but there was one knobhead just a couple of rows back
going, "Oh, you Microsoft Football Ramble, don't like you,"
and like properly abusing the ref, like really unnecessarily. And I thought, it was worse than Pete.
What do you mean?
But look, when when one of those guys who's not funny, when Connor Salmon came on. Oh, here he comes. F off, fish. Shut up, fish. Oh, and then when Kieran Fry came on, he went, "Oi, he's going to fry you, fish." And I was just like, oh,
I quite like that.
No, you don't like fish.
I like it.
But, like, no one, but what is
it's like a school bully's followed him to the game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just,
it reminds me of when I saw a guy,
whoever he is, a dreadful
Did he
bloke.
Think he was Mark Fish?
I don't know, but he wasn't fitting into the ambience in the stadium, let me tell you.
Well, once when I was at Guildford train station, there was a bloke on the platform with just a beard, just an old bloke with a slightly greying beard.
And no clothes.
And his kids came round to him and said, "Oh," and one of them went, "Oi, Beardy, nice beard." And another one chipped in with, "Oi, Captain Birdseye, do us a fish finger." Terrible insults not thought through.
I was at a train station a little while ago and there was a bloke just running along because the train was there, and this drunk bloke just looked at him and went, "Wanker!"
This guy's in his 40s.
What's wrong with the population?
I saw a man doing away on the Tottenham Court Road tube tracks shouting, "I'm sorry, I've just got to do this." You're going to get electrocuted, you idiot.
God. Some little train tales stories there. On the weekend, we had the PFA Awards. Van Persie was the big winner.
Wearing a great blazer. Oh, yeah. Big fan of that.
I think him and Kyle Walker, who obviously won the Young Player, looked very, very dapper.
Yeah, they will do.
But they were talking about Van Persie having a fairly shoddy disciplinary record this season. And he's been a bit rude at times, hasn't he?
To Gary Caldwell.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's
him cruel.
He strikes me as someone who's a bit chippy, Van Persie.
Oh, yeah, he had a reputation as a real hothead when he came over to England. We saw that quite a lot in the early days. But, as he's got older and matured as a man, you see it less, but it's still in there.
He was so arrogant when he was younger.
Yeah.
But stuff like the Writers' Award should be about, how you conduct yourself on...
this was the PFA Award.
Yeah, when it comes to the Writers' Awards, it's going
to
be...
It's a stupid time to have it anyway. I mean, surely if Sergio Aguero, who was nominated, bangs in three hat-tricks between now and the end of the season and City win the league, given that Van Persie hasn't scored for a wee while now. Yeah.
Well, I was surprised Aguero didn't win the Young Player, actually.
He wasn't even nominated for Young Player, was he?
No, I think he was.
He was nominated for Player.
No, he was nominated for Young Player.
Oh, okay, right.
I'd give it
to
I'd
have had Aguero.
But what was nice to see was a pressing defender, Graham Alexander, received the PFA Merit Award.
He's evergreen
for playing a billion games.
I think he might have made his debut the season before Ryan Giggs or something.
91.
Been around for a long time.
Staggering.
1991.
Did he have 100% penalties record as well for Burnley for a long time? Something like that.
He was
a good penalty great taker,
from
sure,
the penalty spot. Yeah. Also in the Premier League team of the year, quite dominated by Manchester City and Spurs players, although Wayne Rooney, Van Persie in there. But it was nice to see Leighton Baines in there
getting the nod.
Indy Leighton Baines.
Now we're going to move on to the Championship, where Reading have been promoted. They were promoted last week, of course.
Champions of the Championship.
What was nice as well is
sounds stupid.
Championship champions.
But it's real, man. You know.
But it's real, man.
right. What was nice as well,
Gary Boosie,
is last season they had their push and they obviously got to the playoff final and were unlucky because they nearly had a great comeback. This season they've gone and done it.
Yeah, because the momentum could have easily been lost. And in actual fact, when they first started this run, they're right in the doldrums, right down the. They've done what Roy King did at Sunderland, just hammered it up the division. Mm.
Brian McDermott. He's got incredible coaching methods.
Yeah.
Because I think it was an interview, I forget which paper it was, but he's got a really interesting way of discipline. He doesn't really have it. The players turn up to training when they want. And so it's very relaxed.
Like a sort of art degree.
Yeah, kind of, but
might be what Portsmouth are doing.
No, but the results of this particular one was that the players get there earlier and leave later.
Wow.
It doesn't affect, you know, oh well, you've been turning up late, so
it's a high risk strategy, isn't it?
Well, yeah,
it is. Especially at Pompey where you don't pay your players.
What do you mean training?
But apparently he went had a bit of time at, I think it was Google's offices in London, and noticed their shift patterns.
Oh,
and
let's
how
get some bean bags in.
How they were
having sushi off of iPads for lunch.
All that sort of stuff
on the pitch.
Promoted. That's all I'm going to say. So it might not work when they get a taste of the Premier League, some of those players, but
seriously, boys, you are going to have to come in now because these teams are really, really good.
Well, five of them are.
Yeah.
Lads, I spent a lot of time on Google, and apparently Barcelona are good. So
I looked them up.
Yeah. When I was at Google.
Middlesbrough beat Southampton 2-1, and because Cardiff dropped points at home to Leeds, Middlesbrough. Got to go down to the last day, see if they can get in the playoffs against Cardiff. At the expense of Cardiff.
But Middlesbrough have just been like a semi-on, haven't they, this season? That's probably how you describe them.
They're two points off it with the game left, aren't they? So they've got a win in Cardiff, got to lose, I think. Southampton to play, West Ham play in between now and when we release, don't
they?
And West Ham need to win. But I tell you what, if West Ham do win, and give me something here, I'll clutch on to anything I can. Right, if West Ham win, I reckon Southampton might absolutely shit themselves.
Put themselves two divisions between themselves and their rivals.
All that might happen.
Yeah. I haven't thought about that one yet. I'll cross that bridge when I come to it.
There's always the FA Cup, Luke.
That's true, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Birmingham and Blackpool, they'll be in the playoffs.
Great to see Blackpool in contention again. It's brilliant. To bounce back from a relegation like that must be so difficult.
They've sort of slipped under the radar, Blackpool.
They have.
Well, that's what they did the first time around, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, yeah.
Yeah, slips. Coventry have been relegated, along with Portsmouth.
Yeah, Coventry haven't been in the third flight since 1964, I read today.
They have been sent to remain in Coventry.
Yeah.
Blimey O'Reilly.
And Portsmouth, didn't even bother winning their home game. You know, Bristol City won anyway, but don't worry about it because we're not winning at home against Derby. You've got nothing to play for. So.
Coventry's arena is not a...
The Rico Arena.
A third tier ground, really. It's a fantastic little... it looks like the same as every other arena ever, but
Premier League for so long, of course.
Yeah. Well, you know, Elland Road was down there for a while, which just seemed crazy.
Yeah,
that's right. But yeah, Barnsley, Forest, and Bristol City all breathe sighs of relief in that division again. League One, Charlton, of course, were promoted last week. They beat Wycombe Wanderers. They could reach 100 points for the season, Charlton.
They have been absolutely magnificent. They've been top of League One since the eighth game of the season.
It's class, isn't it?
You can't argue with that.
Because obviously Huddersfield fell away, and they're in the playoffs. And there's a wonderful duel for second place between Sheffield United and Sheffield Wednesday. Both got a couple of tricky games left.
Well, I think Wednesday are away to Brentford, and Brentford are quite good at home, and Sheffield United go away to Exeter, who will probably be relegated by then. So I think United have probably got the upper hand on that.
Yeah, but United aren't home to Stevenage on the last day, and they're chasing a playoff spot, I think.
Yeah, true. Who knows? If I had to put a tenner on one of them now, it'd be United. So look forward to celebrations, Wednesday fans.
That's right. Rochdale have been relegated from that division as well, and it's looking pretty bleak for Exeter and Chesterfield.
Yeah,
but all the I's and T's will be dotted and crossed soon enough, Jim. Soon enough. Hey, League 2, Swindon Town, they've secured promotion.
Decanio was still annoyed because I didn't win.
Yeah, well, it was great though, because Decanio said, like, you know, a number of months ago, oh, my team is the best team in this division.
I will win this league.
Yeah, and I remember thinking, oh, it's a bit big.
You underestimate that man's arrogance.
Yeah.
I think that when he got into the dressing room when they were promoted, I reckon like some of the players were like, come on, Gaffer. Let's just have a beer. No, you lose. No,
you idiots. We fight now.
Everybody laughing at us now.
I stab you in bum bum.
It's great though. I mean, that's a sort of madness. I was going to say passion, but it's just madness. Isn't it? It's going to sort of carry them up the divisions.
I was looking at the bottom of League 2 today and thinking Barnet might actually get out of it, but then I realised they haven't won a game in like their last nine. So they probably won't. Okay. Sorry, Barnet fans.
Well, whatever,
but it's not my fault.
Whatever you say won't have a bearing on what's going
to
happen.
I was trying to spin Barnet fans saying, you know, you've got a chance, but I don't think they have.
Well, surely they're due a win, like the Alan Partridge Guide to Roulette. If it's red one time, it's bound to be black the next. It's bound to be. Yeah.
People like them. Let's make some more of them.
Now let's shoot off to La Liga, where the Clásico was played and Real Madrid won 2-1 in the Nou Camp. They what was it, 54 games at home unbeaten, Barcelona?
Yeah, something like that.
Not, it's not going to be 55.
Barcelona, rubbish.
They were. They really were. Madrid,
they're the worst
superb
team I've ever seen.
Yeah.
It's over. It's over. The bubble's burst.
I always thought they were overrated anyway.
Yeah, I didn't rate them.
Chelsea finally been found out at home.
On a warm, inclement night.
It was a bit rainy, I think, was it? Like?
Madrid deserved it, though. They played very well.
They were excellent. They defended very well.
It's almost like a lot of people have been saying that Jose Mourinho has had so many sort of trial and errors against Barcelona. Try this, it didn't work. Try that. Obviously, in the Spanish Cup last season or whenever it was. But this time, I think he just totally downplayed the whole affair. It didn't feel like a Clásico.
No.
There was the crowd. It was
dull. Stunted game, wasn't it?
Yeah, completely. And I think that's, he took the sting out of all of it.
And what it was kind of evident when Cristiano Ronaldo scored as well, because he was immediate. He didn't even really celebrate. He just urged calm straight away.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was clearly that was Madrid's plan. Stifle them, keep your heads, fight for everything to the last minute.
And also,
can I just say, I preferred the Mourinho up and down the touchline swinging the other.
Well, we know what we prefer. But what's more effective, though?
Yeah. In the grand scheme of things, one win out of a canny few of the others.
Yeah, they're going to win the league now, mate.
Yeah.
It's huge for them. I think, you know, it's ridiculous to say that Barcelona are, I mean, is it over for Barcelona, blah, blah, blah. But there are some points to be made, which are Barcelona have still got quite a small squad.
Yeah.
You know, I think their squad is only 21 players or something, which is very small compared to Madrid.
A lot of very raw players in there as well.
Yeah.
I thought Christian Teo was excellent.
But I still think that you could see that he was a young and experienced player, though. I mean, he got the right positions. He took players on, but his decision making eventually at the end was quite poor.
Seth Fabregas' form has tailed off massively as well. Dermot Corrigan wrote a really good piece for our website about that.
He did.
If you want to check that out at some point. And you're right. They do have a small squad, and you know, I think those players have just got to be tired. And also, they've missed David Villa for a long, long time. It's incredible, really, when you think about it, that you can miss a player of that quality and it's almost forgotten.
Well, I thought Guillaume Balague made some great points, as he will, you know, he's an excellent journalist. But he said that there was almost a feeling for him that Guardiola's looked at that game and he's thought, if we win this game, we've then got, is it three or four games left of La Liga, something like that? You've got a few games left. Each one of them will be a cup final.
Yeah.
They've got a semi-final against Chelsea, where they're a goal down, so the pressure's on.
Yeah.
Presumably they go through, they'll have the final of the Champions League and they've got the final of the Spanish Cup. And I think, and Balague said, and I agree with him, Guardiola's looked at his squad and thought, we don't have enough in the tank for all this.
No.
Mm. And he's prioritised the Champions League because no team has ever defended it.
Yeah.
They've won the league three times in a row. He's put out a team that could have beaten Madrid. You know, and it's not quite happened for him, but the Champions League is their priority. And I really think that's what he's done. You know, Sanchez, resting Sanchez, who's been a great player for them, was an interesting decision.
There'll also be another added chapter to that, because Mourinho was hired by Madrid to win La Decima, the 10th Champions League, 10th European Cup.
Yeah.
If Guardiola stops him doing that, he'll still be the thorn on the side. And you know what it's like at Real Madrid? Winning the league is great, but you know, I mean, they've
there's been teams that have won the league, wasn't he?
Exactly. So, you know,
Champions League, I think he won, didn't he?
But Jupp Heynckes won the Champions League, right, and then was sacked as well.
Well, Capello left them when he won the league as well.
It's an incredible club, isn't it? It's absolutely ludicrous when you look at it that way. But I mean, the Chelsea Barcelona game would have happened by the time this show comes out. But I think a 2-1 defeat for Chelsea at the Nou Camp and still going through is not impossible at all.
No.
Chelsea are difficult to score against. They've been defending so resolutely and
so
well.
And you often wonder if, like, and it's sort of tapping into what you guys were saying earlier about...
They could have beaten 5-0 by the time.
Yeah, they could. But what I was going to say was, if you have enough goes at it, and Mourinho's had quite a lot of goes at playing at Barcelona now, and if he thinks to himself, if we just do this, this and this, and we've got a decent chance here, because Barcelona, they won't resort to lumping it. Yeah. They won't hammer it up over the back of the... They won't play a long ball. They'll play in that same way all the time. And sooner or later, a team, which, let's remember, has cost €300 million or whatever, should be competing with them, and eventually it will start to compete with them and overcome them if Barcelona don't improve or think and adapt with new ways to play and strengthen their team.
Well, they've tinkered a lot, haven't they? Like, through necessity. They love to keep it fresh. You look at Cuenca and, again, Teo coming through, as we said, Thiago Alcantara as well. That team shifts around a lot. You tend to think of this Barcelona team as a generation that started in the 2009 with that season when Guardiola started. The team's so different now, so different from that. And, you know, maybe it's one of the lesser ones, because they're giving a lot of young players a chance. And it's just this stage of the season, with, as you say, Mark, it's so much on. They're going to find it difficult.
But when they've won 13 out of 17 trophies they've competed
for. Yeah, then let's not go overboard. Yeah.
If they finish second to Real Madrid, it's no disgrace.
One particular iteration of this team will be remembered as one of the greatest club sides ever.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, there was a point where Guardiola averaged a trophy every 15 games.
Brilliant.
Incredible. Absolutely magnificent.
Also, and they're in the Demon Dust Hall of Fame.
Elsewhere in Spain, Sevilla drew 1-1 with Levante. Levante still in fifth, hoping that they can catch Malaga in fourth. But the match was between Sevilla and Levante was briefly interrupted after fans protested by throwing on scores of tennis balls. And this was because of the kickoff time. They weren't happy about it. The game was put back to 10:30 local time because of the Barca-Madrid match kicking off 2.5 hours earlier.
I'd be annoyed at that.
It's a real problem in Spanish football, surely, that so many people care about Barca or Real.
That's
Madrid,
right. That everyone will...
All the other games have moved around for it.
It's stupid.
It's a great protest, though.
Yeah, it was cool. Isn't it because of something Basel did once?
Well, Basel did... Yeah, Basel did, I suppose, a tennis ball protest in 2010 where they threw a load of tennis balls on the pitch. But that was because the kickoff time was changed to avoid a clash with a local tennis tournament.
That is ridiculous.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
It works.
But it was quite funny to see loads of footballers...
It wasn't a golf tournament.
It's quite funny to see loads of footballers effectively relegated to being ball boys as well. There were just hundreds of tennis balls.
What else are they going to chuck? Like, calendars?
Tellies, obviously. Tellies.
File of faxes for the older...
the yuppies.
Yeah.
On to Serie A then, where Milan dropped points at home to Bologna in the title run-in. Zlatan, though, scored a last gasp equaliser. Lovely little scissored volley.
Oh, it was beautiful, wasn't it? But it was really delicately cushioned, almost like he kissed it with his foot.
Yeah.
Because he was on fire in that game, Zlatan. He had a goal wrongly disallowed.
It was over the line, that was. Definitely over the line.
Sickening for them. And that's not the first time they've had over the line at the San Siro. But Juve beat Roma 4-0. They're 3 points ahead with 5 games to go.
Them. Pretty in pink, weren't they?
Yeah.
Lovely kit.
Big star on it.
Yeah, yeah. Vidal was superb in that game, as well. And Pirlo missed the penalty, but scored the rebound, didn't he?
It's incredible for Pirlo. He goes to Juve and he's...
It was a massive dive for the penalty as well. And the keeper got sent off. Steckelenburg got sent off. It wasn't a penalty.
But Steckelenburg came out two-footed, though, in a way you rarely see goalkeepers do. So I could imagine the referee probably thought, yeah, that's a mental lunge. What are you doing?
He thought, I've seen Ashley Young. That's definitely a penalty.
Another big story in Italy on the weekend was in the Genoa-Siena game, where it was Siena won 4-1. Genoa 17th and looking over their shoulders at the relegation zone. When they went 4-0 down, a small group of Genoa ultras, about 60 to 80 of them, threw smoke bombs onto the pitch, held up play for 45 minutes, and they demanded the Genoa players take off their shirts and hand them over. And incredibly, the captain, Marco Rossi, went round and collected the players' shirts.
That was awful. I can see why he's trying to appease them, but it was such a sad, tragic thing to watch a grown man have to do.
Just to play the devil's belittling. Advocate, the defending was appalling. It was dreadful.
Yeah, but it should never come to that. Come on.
I genuinely felt the referee, because it exploded on Twitter and people were just posting, here's a stream, check out what's happening. And it was like, are they going to play in skins? Flipping brilliant.
I remember one of the, was it the goalkeeper? Or certainly one of the players refused, didn't he?
Yeah, it was
Giuseppe Frey.
He was crying, wasn't he?
And remonstrated with the head ultras, and then one of the ultras started kissing him, and it's one of those things where we find those sort of scenes completely shocking, and rightfully so to a certain extent.
Yeah.
It's a completely different world with the old ultra situation. We don't have that here.
The mentality of the ultras is interesting. I read quite a bit about it in a book, which I forget the name of. I'll get back to you about it. It's the ultras, their mentality is they see themselves as the only real permanent fixture at the club.
Yep.
Yeah.
Because managers and players come and go all the time, so they think that they, in their own mind, they think they are the custodians of the club.
Yeah.
And they can demand. And we saw it happen when Lazio were trying to sign Thuram, and all the ultras gathered round and called a meeting with Thuram, said we won't racially abuse you, all that sort of stuff. Yeah, we really want you to come here, and that sort of scared him a bit, and he didn't sign for him.
All right then.
Well, then he broke that clear. You know, I thought that was red. I took that as red. So it's a very interesting psychology they've got, and it's the same ground where, do you remember the crowd trouble between Italy and Serbia with ultras as well? Same ground, yeah.
Right. Which is odd, because it's Genoa. I know Sampdoria meant to be quite a nice middle class sort of. Kind of the a Fulham kind
of
situation.
I don't know enough about
it. I don't know.
Very steep standard at Sampdoria.
If you want to focus on the football, I saw a decent part of that game, and Genoa's defending was so bad. Mm. We don't like to see it, Jim. I agree with you. But if we were going to see it, I'm pleased it was that game, because that defending was absolutely shocking.
Yeah.
Some of those ultras should come down Fratton Park. They won't believe their luck.
But it's crazy, because they reckoned it was only about 60 to 80 of them.
But they got over under tunnel and they stopped it. They basically made it very effectively very difficult for it to continue.
But I tell you,
a lot of leather jackets. Lovely.
Oh well, they will do that. But Scully, the pronunciation. He was the one who refused to take his jersey.
Yeah, well, he confronted a guy who was literally standing on the tunnel, and it looked like he was going to pull him off of it for a bit, and it looked like it could get properly violent and really
some
nasty.
Some reports say that his grandfather's
he's got an interesting life story.
Organised crime, shall we say?
Yeah, but, well, allegedly, yeah, he's
no, he got done for.
Is he under house arrest or something like that?
Yeah,
he's got some interesting backstory.
Exactly.
I can't leave his house.
Really furious that Baggio can sort it out for that Burmese lady, but not him.
Yeah.
Well, that's very true. In the Bundesliga, Borussia Dortmund are champions.
Aren't they?
Well done to them. Beat Mochen Gladbach.
Did you see how they celebrated?
Arms in the air.
There was that as well, but all their sort of incredibly beautiful, glamorous wives and girlfriends came onto the pitch just having a beer.
Was it?
All these really
so
demure looking women.
Was
just
it a Stein?
Swigging pints.
They set a new league record, going 26 games unbeaten.
Yeah, they haven't lost since September. Charlton-esque.
Superb, isn't it?
Yeah.
They could do the double over Bayern. They've got them in the German Cup next month. Also, Dortmund have the second highest average attendance in Europe behind Barcelona. 80,000.
Lovely.
That's all in that one stand.
And a fantastic away support, no doubt.
Yeah.
Did you see Schalke, Augsburg versus Schalke? Huntelaar scored the equaliser.
Yeah.
They drew 1-1. And then they left behind. He didn't get on the bus.
What?
They left him behind, and they all got on the bus to the airport, and he was there. He had to get
still celebrating.
Listen to this though, he scored the E-clause as well. That's gratitude. Yeah. He had to get a police car to the airport, and he made the flight with 10 minutes to spare.
Brilliant,
amazing. Yeah. One of them late runs. Mm. Raul's looking to set. He's set to leave.
Yeah,
it's a shame. Have you got any idea why is it that he wants to go
to the Middle East? I think there's a lot of interest in the Middle East money-wise.
I think money-wise, and also he probably wants to make sure he leaves on a high.
Yeah, fair.
Maybe it could be. Are they going to retire the number seven jersey?
I think that's stupid.
I think it is.
That's upset a lot of previous players as well, hasn't it? Yeah.
There'll be no shirts left.
Well, yeah. We're not at Genoa either.
Yeah.
Now we're going to go to Australia. Because the A-League Grand Final happened, the Brisbane Roar became the first team in the A-League's history to defend the league title with a 2-1 win over Perth Glory.
Can I just be the first to say, I don't watch an awful lot of Australian football, to my chagrin. Maybe I should watch some more. But I saw most of this game, and I'd like to refer to it as a physically robust affair.
Oh, it is. It was tough.
There was one guy, right, who I'd say running full pelt. elbow smashed a guy in the face. Yeah,
Shane Smeltz, wasn't it, the guy? He's like one of, he's like Perth Glory's best player. He's been a real sort of standout player in the league.
Across
and
his face.
Yeah. Across his, like, yeah, he looked like the Invisible Man from what I saw.
How do you know?
I think within football, yeah, that's very true. Within football, you've still got the Aussie rules of football.
Yeah.
It was a very, very robust game. It was drama as well, all over the place.
I really like Brisbane Roar. I've seen a fair bit of them. I don't even know why, actually.
Because you're a Glory supporter. That's
yeah, that's why. But they play really nice, sort of expansive, open attacking football. It's just, you know, the penalty was never
No, it was a difficult decision, wasn't it?
Berents Berecha sort of kicked his own foot away.
Yeah. It was Liam Miller, was it? Who, ex-Manchester United.
Yes, yeah, the new Roy Keane.
He sort of swung.
That's why the game was so angry.
He swung and missed the ball, didn't he?
Yeah.
Pete, 2,500 Perth Glory fans travelled basically the breadth of a continent to watch that game. Good away support or not? Yeah,
it's not that many, is it?
Is that ticket in your boxes?
Flights are cheap over there.
There's about 50,000 people in there.
Yeah, Suncorp Stadium.
Well, see, the Australian football, you know, the crowds aren't huge, but the fans seem really, really into it. The atmosphere always sounds really good whenever you see it.
I'd say 50,000 is decent.
Well, yeah, but it's the A-League final, isn't it? I mean, generally. Yeah.
Big in the game.
That's right.
96 minute winner in a final.
I love that the league has a final.
Yeah,
it's really good.
Yeah, it is nice.
The fact that they've retained it, the first team to do so, I think would that be something to do with why you support them, Jim? Or
I don't support them. I just like them.
Perfect season.
That's a dig, isn't it, Jimbo?
Yeah.
Right then, before we go to Going for Glory, we've got to say this was I saw this last week. Now, you obviously shall we say met Claudio Caniggia?
He bumped into me. Yeah, that was enough for me.
You touched his hand. I was there, Jim.
Did he apologise?
There was no bumping.
No, I didn't touch his hand.
Yeah, you sort of brushed.
I remember that.
Yeah.
This is making it sound like I sort of frotted him. he bumped into the back of me.
He's got previous.
Was it a hand or a buttock?
It was just like a shoulder.
Mm. Okay,
you got like a shoulder.
You've got previous from Argentinian forwards. His brother's. Are you about to say his brother's a scout for Liverpool?
No.
Oh, well, basically the reason he was there. You know, we were confused why he was there.
Yeah.
His brother is Liverpool's South American scout. That's basically why.
Oh, I thought it might be to get away from the wife a bit. Because,
oh, possibly.
Because she said recently in the press, there are two reasons a woman selects a footballer. Which is a brilliant start to a quote. For love or for money. I, however, chose both.
Money.
I have over 200 dresses that I never even wear. One must keep up with the fashion.
Indeed.
One must.
But his daughter waded in as well, saying, I'm still...
The granddaughter of the wind.
She said, I'm still too young to know whether I shall marry a footballer. I don't like Spaniards. I like Italians, Argentinians. A man must dress well, that's fundamental. Without that, and a Ferrari, there is nothing.
Clearly he's bringing her up well.
Wow. Yeah. And now it's time for Going for Glold.
Going for Glold. Glold.
It's time for Glod for Glod, Marcus. Hey, just going to get the clues out. This was a suggestion from the quite lovely Antonio Christopher. Thank you for that. If you'd like to suggest anyone, pete@thefootballramble.com.
Can I suggest one?
No.
Come on.
No, you cannot.
That's not how it works.
Silly me.
Right, first clue, gents. I retired at 29.
Stop. Marco van Basten?
No.
Oh.
Stop.
Steve Coppell?
No.
I think I might be a bit younger than that.
I was fucking cool.
Stop. Eric Cantona, was it 30?
No.
Was he 30? It's not him.
Yeah. In 2005, I was made the Knight of the Order of the Star of Italian Solidarity, would you believe?
Oh.
Whoa. That's an accolade, isn't it?
Mm.
Anybody?
Stop.
It's not Paolo Maldini.
Carbone. Benito Carbone.
No, he's older than that. Lentini?
No. Okay. I moved to Roma for 42 billion Italian lira. Oof!
Stop. Battistuta?
No.
No, he's retired at 29, didn't he?
He's playing in Qatar, man.
Yeah, true.
He's playing in Qatar, man!
Suddenly came over all northeast there.
I scored 5 goals in qualifying for the 98 World Cup.
Stop.
Oh, God.
Daniel Fonseca?
No.
No, not Italian.
Of course he's
stop.
Not.
Stop. Moreira. Moreira, the winger. Is that him?
No.
Oh,
no, the winger. Antonio Christopher, you've done very well here. I ended my career at Bolton Wanderers. Pele named me in his FIFA 100.
God, this could be piss poor, this.
Yeah, we should have got this.
That's a lot of money. I don't know how much it is, but...
Oh, stop. You're a joker, Ev?
No.
No, you never went to Rome.
Retire Twiggy.
I know.
That's just poor.
I'm just grasping.
Don't say anything.
Yeah. It was still a lot of money.
Yeah.
No?
No.
No, so that was my last clue, I'm afraid. Hidetoshi Nakata.
Of course it is.
Christopher, well done, man. That was brilliant.
He beat us. I wasn't thinking Italian.
I wasn't thinking Japan.
I was thinking Italian.
No. Nobody was thinking Japan.
Thank you for your
email,
lady.
Shall we have an email?
Yeah. Dear Ramblets, having listened to some old rambles covering ridiculous things heard from the terraces, I started to think about ridiculous things heard from TV / radio commentators. Although there isn't exactly a shortage of examples for this, the stupidest thing I've ever heard comes from the thoroughly unsurprising source of David Pleat. During the Tottenham-Chelsea game in April 2010, where John Terry got sent off, Pleat's co-commentator was discussing how brilliant Luka Modric was when Pleat suddenly piped up with, "And I know his dentist, and his dentist thinks he's a super, super guy."
That's the kind of thing.
Followed by no explanation, as far as I can remember. That is from George Overhill. George, thank you very much.
Did that definitely happen?
Oh, no, that's the kind of stuff Pleat comes out with.
But that's what you want from him. You don't want, you know, anything else. Yeah.
I'll tell you what I want from Pleat. I want good evening, everyone.
Good evening, everyone. A bit of whimsy. Fuck off home.
Yeah. Can someone do my Guardian shortboard? Yeah. I can't be bothered.
He's your confused uncle that never married. And that's what you want from Pleat.
Yeah.
Slow driver.
Oh, it's profile time.
Yay.
Get on it. Oh, it's one of the best players from the 90s. It's Rivaldo.
There we go.
And if anybody goes, "Oh, but he did that thing against Turkey," piss off and don't listen.
Yeah. Turn off now.
He wasn't too bad in the 2000s either.
It still is.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. 40th birthday recently.
Yeah, exactly. Still going.
I'm glad you said
life
that.
Life begins at 40. I'll tell you what, he's had such a life already.
Well, he was born on the 19th of April, 1972.
5 years. Just 5 years after the Summer of Love. Mm. Did he win the sperm race, Jim?
He will have done. He would have smashed it.
Yeah. Overhead kicked it. It's
probably, got awards for it.
Yeah.
A man who was constantly overhead kicking.
A fantastic, phenomenal player.
In his pomp, watching him play football was like seeing your best friend drive for the first time. Because it was like, where did you learn that? And B, how were you allowed to do that?
Where can I get me some of that?
It's actually really probably the closest Brazil have had to Garrincha since, because he was bow-legged, wasn't he? Because he had a very, very poor upbringing. He was malnourished, and he had a couple of teeth missing and stuff as well. Right. He had a really terrible, terrible sort of time.
Yeah.
And that's why he had that sort of weird bandy-leggedness.
Indeed. He said in an interview once, he said, "I'll never forget the hunger I used to feel as a boy." Oh. Which is harrowing.
He had a lot of criticism for his general attitude and his general demeanour, being quite a sort of introverted guy, and maybe it comes from that. You know,
but it's become clear later in his career how much he loves football, though.
Oh, absolutely. He's still playing at four. He's played in, like,
he's playing in Angola.
Yeah. Well, he's playing in Angola now. He was at Bunyodkor, wasn't he, for a bit in Kazakhstan?
Yeah.
Is that right?
I'm just looking at it.
No, it was Uzbekistan.
His childhood was terrible. You know, his dad got run over and killed when he was only 15 or something. You know, he used to, his first local club, he would have to walk 10 miles each way to training.
God.
Yeah. I mean, it's a
3-hour walk.
Yeah. He would have to.
There's your cardio for the day, Jesus. Yeah.
He would sell, like, drinks and sweets and stuff on the beach just to make a few pennies for his family, you know. So a terrible start to life, really. But despite all this, his footballing talent managed to come through, and he was signed by lower league side Santa Cruz in the north of Brazil. He only played 4 games for them, but he got 6 goals. It's beginning.
Yeah.
He got noticed by Mogi Mirim in Brazil's second team.
Say that again, just because it's funny.
It's a good name, isn't it, Mogi Mirim?
That's his hometown team, isn't it? Did he not get an investment involved in them?
Yeah, I think later on, did he not go back as a glorious role as president player? Or
something? Yeah.
Terek Grozny-esque or whatever. He got noticed playing for Moggy when he famously scored a goal straight from kickoff in a Sao Paulo state championship match. And it was a goal that, as he described, changed his life. That was in April 93, because his name was in the papers the next day, saying classic Brazilian stuff. They were saying, "This guy scored a goal that not even Pelé scored."
Yeah.
But 93 was a big year for him.
Pelé's just going, "Well, there was only one of them, wasn't there?"
Yeah. He got a big move to Corinthians, who... he played 19 league games and scored 11 goals. And then the following year he went to Palmeiras, scoring nearly half of his 45 league matches there. He won a league title. And that was when people really noticed him, you know. And this all caught the attention of Deportivo La Coruña in Spain. But before he went there, though, he was a part of that brilliant Brazil Olympic squad that finished third in the Atlanta Olympic Games in 96. There were some great teams in that tournament. Mm. We talked about it in the Kanu profile. Mm. Obviously, Nigeria won it. Argentina had some players. Yeah. But Brazil finished third, and of course, that's a huge disappointment for them. Especially, I think they were 3-1 up against
Nigeria. Because a lot of these countries take the Olympic Games very seriously.
They do.
In terms of football.
That's right.
Obviously, in this country, we've not really entered the team. We will do in August, but we've not been able to because it's Great Britain and that sort of thing, but in other countries very very much a big deal, you know.
And as I said, it was seen as a big failure when they came third, and it was the start of a funny relationship between him and the Brazilian supporters, which we'll come on to. So he went to Spain after the summer of 96, played for Deportivo. And he was only there for a season, but 22 goals in 46 appearances was very impressive, considering it's his first season in Europe, and he's still a young guy.
Yeah.
And Deportivo finished third that season.
He's not a striker, by the way.
No, sorry, I should say.
Yeah.
Well, when he went to Barcelona, he was sometimes played out on the left, but an attacking midfielder.
Yeah, yeah.
Scored so many goals for a player there. And, of course, after Deportivo, he went to Barcelona. The powers that be there thought, we fancy a bit of this.
Yeah.
And he kind of replaced Ronaldo, not in a positional sense, but more in a sort of talismanic sense.
Yeah, and sort of weighing in with all the goals as well.
Yeah.
I mean, he was weirdly second top scorer, I think.
Three occasions, I think.
It was a lot.
Yeah.
He replaced him in a Brazilian-y sense.
Yeah. He did. Well, they've often got a big player, don't they, Barcelona, that really is kind of like their main man. I know they've got
a talisman.
Yeah, I mean, obviously Messi at the moment, but it was Ronaldinho. He was one of those guys, you know, very much so. And he wowed that place so many times at the Camp Nou. And my goodness, did he have a shot on him?
Yeah.
Like, a driller.
Yeah.
You know?
But also a very deft touch as well. He could just do everything with the ball.
He had an excellent, really, really rapid change of direction as well. Mm. The amount of time he'd go to pass or shoot, fake it, change direction, the amount of times defender would end up on his arse.
Yeah. But he could sort of cushion balls that were coming, sort of long balls that were coming down really sort of deftly, and just then absolutely thump them.
There was a moment
almost like taking a free kick in mid-air.
Yeah. not even just a layoff though, he'd take it down and then he'd just spot someone and you wouldn't even see it, and then this guy just arrive and he'd be like, oh Jesus Christ,
I've scored. How's he done that? He won the league in Copa del Rey in his first season and was second top goal scorer. Only Christian Vieri scored more than him in La Liga that season. A decent start.
Decent start.
After that season, along came France 98, where he was with Brazil, showed the world what he could do at the biggest stage, weighing with a few goals and assists. Scored in the group game against Morocco, but his best contribution was in the quarterfinals against Denmark.
Did he not score past Schmeichel in that game?
He did.
Nice long range,
twice.
Low effort.
He scored twice. That was his second, Brazil's third. Because Denmark put up a good fight against Brazil, and they came back to 2-2. And it was just a case of, we've got Rivaldo. So.
Yeah, we're not having this.
Yeah. All, well, so. It really was that Rivaldo thought, come on, here we go. Doof.
They did that in 2002 against England as well. No.
But obviously Brazil lost in the final. Again, it was considered a failure. But that Brazil 98 side were great. They really were. And Rivaldo was a big part of that. Back at Barcelona, he was owning the Nou Camp. In 98-99 season, they won the league again. He was second top scorer again with 24 goals. Only Raul scored more goals than him in the league. One more. And that's a proper striker.
I think you could describe Raul as a proper striker, he would fit the bill there.
Yeah, that's
a proper striker,
99, he won FIFA World Player of the Year and the Ballon d'Or. Of course, they hadn't merged at that point. And they also won the Copa America, Brazil did, in 99. He finished top goal scorer with Ronaldo on 5 goals. Imagine having those two as spearheaded in your attacks.
Oh God,
he scored 2 in the final against Uruguay.
Yeah.
Which is so strange why he's not loved by the Brazilian fans so much. But anyway,
because he tended to take the blame for a lot of those sort of disappointing results, perhaps because he was quite talismanic, you know. I mean, they tend to have a lot of talismans at any one time in Brazil, don't they? But he really did seem to bear the brunt of it. Was it the Olympic defeat, I think, that was the first one.
The Olympic defeat was the first one.
Where he was sort of blamed for it, and it never really ceased.
Yeah.
Well, he's quite an aloof sort of character, and maybe that's... You know,
maybe that's...
He was Brazilian, so maybe that's kind of...
True, I mean, he's not particularly flash. He's not... he's not the party boy like Ronaldinho, so
yeah.
He was from the north, which is, you know, quite poor and whatnot, and so those in the south, where, you know, you've got the Rio and a few more places like that, a little bit more money. As I say, it's a little bit more kind of a colourful kind of lifestyle, arguably, or maybe Salvador in the north might disagree with that. So he was maybe considered quite boring, quite a flat personality.
Yeah.
And people didn't really, in Brazil, they want a bit more.
They want a superstar, don't they?
Yeah,
well, that's stick to it by the newspapers anyway. So, I mean, it was probably where the money was, where the newspapers were actually written, I suppose.
Yeah, it is a funny one. One of his best games for Barcelona was away in Milan during a Champions League match in 2000 when he got a hat-trick in a 3-all draw, 2 free kicks and a diving header. And that's not even the best hat-trick he scored for Barcelona.
Get on it.
He did score a couple of goals against Manchester United in the Champions League, if I may just delay that hat-trick for a brief moment. Do you remember that at the Nou Camp when Cole and York scored a couple of goals, and there was one goal he scored, the ball came over, and I think he did a chest up and a bicycle kick. He didn't quite execute it as well, but he got another attempt at that. It was against Valencia, ladies and gentlemen. Now, Barcelona, it was the last day of the, I think it was 2000-2001 season.
It was, yeah.
And Barcelona needed to beat Valencia to qualify for the fourth Champions League spot. Crazy, really, to think that. I think.
Well, they were in real, real dire straits.
Yeah. And he was their shining light, you know, sort of dragging them into there.
Their other shining light was Patrick Kluivert.
Yeah.
That's the sort of level they were at back then.
Valencia were in the Champions League spot, weren't they? And Barcelona needed to beat them to take that spot.
Valencia just needed a draw.
That's right.
And Raval has scored one of the best hat-tricks you'll see.
Yeah.
Probably the best hat-trick.
Yeah, his first one was
aesthetically.
His first one was an absolute scud. Oh, no, the first one was a free kick.
Yeah, and the second one was a long ranger, yeah.
Yeah, it didn't even go perfectly in the corner. It was just hit at such pace.
Yeah.
And Canizares, the keeper.
Yeah.
You know, and then it all came down to the last minute of the last game of the season. And De Boer floated the ball onto his chest.
Back to goal.
Chested up. Absolutely textbook.
I remember saying that video. You dirty boy. You dirty, dirty boy.
Like, it did.
Curling an overhead kick is ridiculous. And the reason I say it's probably the best hat-trick ever is the circumstances as well. Like you say, pretty much the last kick of the game.
Of the season.
Well, Valencia were a good team around that time. They went on to win the league, didn't they, under Benitez and stuff. So, you know, they were a decent side.
Oh, it's one of my favourite goals of all time. It's just delicious.
How dare he?
He's got no right. He's got no right to shoot from there.
It's one of those moments where the Valencia players would just look around at each other and look at the manager, and everyone would just be like that.
What do you want from us?
Yeah. Don't worry, you can't defend that. Yeah. You know, absolutely superb. Again, he finished second top goal scorer in the league, as we said earlier. 24 goals, one behind Raul again. That proper striker, nipping in. But he was just capable of doing anything, wasn't he, Rivaldo? When you get to that level, he's just a different guy. He scored a goal against the halfway line. I think it was against Atletico Madrid. I think that was a little bit earlier in his Barcelona career. But again, he was under pressure from a player. It wasn't like Beckham, where he had a lot of room and he looked up and he thought, yeah, go on then. It was so much quicker. There was he didn't have a run-up at it. Just, boom, there you go. Have that. Incredibly, he scored 136 goals in 253 games for Barcelona. But despite this, despite all that, he came under such criticism from the Barcelona fans. You know, they accused him of delivering more in a Brazil shirt, and vice versa. Brazilian fans accused him of delivering more in a Barcelona shirt.
I'm off to Kazakhstan. Sod it.
I mean, ridiculous, you know. Absolutely ridiculous. I mean, one Spanish journalist suggested it was because Rivaldo, you know, never sort of marketed himself that well. He never did interviews much. Yeah. Like we said earlier, you know, Rob Smythe, incidentally, did an excellent piece on Rivaldo a few years ago and sums it all up quite nicely. But yeah, some of the Barcelona fans had got on his back, you know, would blame him if they didn't win. And Rivaldo said in an interview once after a game, he said, "I'm not a machine. I don't see why people demand more of me than the other players. I've played a lot of games carrying an injury. I just don't know what else I can do."
Yeah,
I'd have been like, "Well, you're decent.
Don't worry about it, mate.
I've got no beef." It's not me.
It's ridiculous, isn't it? Absolutely ridiculous.
Did people think he was De Nilsson?
Could be, yeah.
Maybe. The year he left Barcelona was 2002. That was also the year he would achieve glory for Brazil when they won the World Cup in Japan and South Korea. He was superb in that tournament, scoring in Brazil's first five games of that
England
tournament. Yeah, most
scored a lovely one against England,
Belgium and England in the knockout phase.
The game that Ronaldinho was sent off for a horrendous assault on England's rose, Danny Mills.
But he was great in that tournament, Rivaldo. Well,
Ronaldo, Rivaldo and Ronaldinho up front. You know, you'd probably fancy yourself.
It's not bad, is it? It's not bad, these Brazilians. Of course, he did have his silly moment against Turkey. We can't forget that.
No, what are you talking about? It was a horrendous assault on him. It's lucky they got through that.
That was a shame, but unfortunately nowadays, people seem to just remember that, really.
Yeah, why do people hate this guy?
Because it is a wicked animated GIF, that's why, yeah?
He's been a victim of the GIF.
I tell you what, when Rivaldo scored that one against England, big Phil Scolari's given it one on the sideline. The camera cut to it, and he was going mad, and everyone was crowding around and jumping on him.
Because he knew that was it.
You know. You don't remember the footage, and Ericsson just grabs a bottle of water and starts drinking from it really calmly. Yeah. There's nothing from Ericsson at that point.
No, there won't
be. Sven.
Ah, Svenigans. But yeah. So he had a fantastic 2002 World Cup, and of course Brazil won the tournament. In 2002, he signed for Milan. He didn't play too much for Milan. It was a funny time.
See, this, I think, is where people think that his career just, like, nosedived.
No.
And people kind of look at his career, you know, post-Barcelona, and seem to judge him more on that, because he moved around a lot. You know, he played in Greece for a bit, as we'll obviously come to himself.
Successfully.
And also judge him on modern Barcelona, rather than what the state they were in when he actually played for them.
Yeah, he played in a very different Barcelona team than what he was. Well, not very different.
I mean,
but
the fact they were fighting for fourth place on the last day of the season shows that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was on the bench for Milan during their Champions League win. So he has got a Champions League winner's medal, but he didn't play, you know. And for a player like that, you want to be playing in those types of games. So he moved on to Olympiacos, where he won league titles and cups and a great time in Greece.
Yeah, he scored a lot of goals. I didn't realise quite how successful he was out there, and he scored a lot of significant goals.
He scored one in the cup final when it was an outrageous goal. I mean, he's not far from the corner flag, and he just curls it right over the key, and he means it. It's not like a cross come shot. Absolutely glorious. And then he moved to AEK Athens afterwards, and he had a good time in Greece. Then he moved to Uzbekistan. He still won the league and cup in Uzbekistan. 33 league goals in 53 league games.
I've seen Bunyodkor play, not very good.
No,
I saw him play.
Not now.
I saw him play this season. They were terrible. I don't know what they were like when he played for them.
Yeah,
better. I think it's better.
I'd say so.
He went back to Brazil after that. As I say, there was something to do with Mogi Mirim again. But then he played for Sao Paulo, quite sensationally.
Yeah, I think what happened was he went back to Mogi Mirim, which is like his hometown club, became, as you said, player president. Then I think that sort of Brazil got hold of it and realised it was actually far too good, and so he went to Sao Paulo.
Yeah, but it was nice actually when he went back to Sao Paulo, because in an interview he was asked how Brazilian players reacted to him when he returned home to play there, because Ronaldo said that he was given some real treatment, as you could imagine. But Rivaldo actually said, he said, people want to swap shirts with me, and there are players who tell me I was the best player at the 2002 World Cup. But when you're out there in the middle of all that chaos, you just have to say thanks and you're off. There's no time to chat. He even said as well that sometimes you'll get a player who's marking you tightly, and he'll even apologise and say, my coach told me to stick close to you and mark you. I know you're a great player. And he said, but I tell him it's fine. You have to do what you've got to do.
It's nice. So
it's
weird.
But it's nice that his fellow professionals realise
that. Happens to me a lot when I play, actually.
Is that true, isn't it? Yeah. But that's good. I mean, maybe some of the fans don't recognise it, but it seems a lot of the players do. So that's good.
I think the players would generally have a greater appreciation of what he's doing, given that they're in the same trade, you know, trying to do the same, you know.
Yeah, how can you not with the...
It's Rivaldo! Yeah. People shouldn't be having a pop at it.
All of the ridiculous things he's done, that hat-trick, just...
Alone.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Literally that alone.
But that's the thing with Barcelona. You've got the stats, you know. Score was there, the club's top goal scorer, and so many seasons they won the league, they won the cup,
all the things he's done for Brazil,
they won the World Cup.
They won the World Cup.
They won the Copa America, and he was top goal scorer in the tournament.
Yeah, not good enough.
No, no.
In fact, let's not put him in.
Sorry.
And then he left to join Cabo Score in the Angolan league. All I know is he's played 6 games out there, 5 goals.
Yeah, you've got to love your football to be playing out in Angola.
40 years old.
Yeah,
it's surprising he can't find a more sort of permanent fixture in Brazil. You would think, you know,
it's 40.
There's like 5 billion clubs in Brazil.
There must be some reason for him going out there. Yeah,
well, he said the language actually was one of the reasons why, because obviously they speak Portuguese.
Of course.
Maybe he's just got the travel bug.
Yeah.
I don't know. But Spanish football expert John Carlin summed up Rivaldo quite nicely when he stated back in the day that Rivaldo combines to dazzling effect the two essential qualities of the ideal footballer: artistry and efficiency.
Yeah.
And with that, he's coming into the new minutes all the time. Come on in, Rivaldo. Right, ladies and gentlemen, that is the end of the Football Ramble for this week. If you want to get in touch with us, the email address is show@thefootballramble.com, and the website is thefootballramble.com.
Yes, it is. And this week on the website, Dermot Corrigan looks at Cesc Fabregas' teething trouble at Barcelona, which we've mentioned earlier. James Appel tells the tale of the Russian Premier League side Rostov, who have just appointed their fifth manager of the season. And Mikhail Zakodny tells a bizarre story of FC Köln's Slavomir, I think that's Peshko, who was sort of drunkenly kidnapped by a cab driver. Very bizarre story. So just get over there, check that out. And elsewhere, there's the Hall of Fame, the shop, the forum, and our email addresses and that in the little contact bit if you want to look at that. Don't know why you would.
I'll tell them about your comedy store gig as well.
Yes, there's another gig coming up at the comedy store. It is for the Balls to Homelessness charity. On the bill is Alan Davies, Ian Stone, Ramesh Ranganathan. You enjoyed him a lot.
Yeah, he was
last
good, yeah.
Time.
Interesting to hear what Alan Davies has to say.
Yeah, indeed. Jack Whitehall's on, Sean Walsh is on, and there's a massive star who I can't name, but is brilliant. Yeah, and most importantly, me.
We'll come down.
Yeah. We're there.
May 7th, the Comedy Store. Go to the Comedy Store website for tickets.
Or maybe you can put a link on the Football Ramble forum or something.
Yes.
Yeah.
Marvellous. Any more?
Nope.
Say goodbye, Jim.
Goodbye.
Say goodbye, Pete.
Goodbye.
And say goodbye, Luke.
Goodbye.
And it's goodbye from me, Bethel Baffle Biff Boff Wookie Whoopsies.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.